Welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show, a place where business and thought leaders come to weigh in on important sales-related topics that you can use in your sales career and life. I'm your host, Jason Cutter. My mission is to get your help in changing sales from something prospects fear to an act of service they actually seek out and appreciate. Whether you're in sales, leading sales teams, or own a business, I hope this helps you improve your selling effectiveness and you can go out into the world as an authentic persuader. What's going on, everybody? Happy Thursday. Today is December 10th. I can't believe it's already, let's say, a week and a half into December, and holidays are right around the corner. It's so interesting how this year, 2020, has felt like at some point it's been really slow and crazy. Obviously, there's a lot going on. Not even going to go into any of that. And then on the flip side, it seems like it's gone by super, super fast. And it's like, I can't believe it's already December. Most people I talk to can't believe it's already almost time for 2021. And hopefully, I know this is on the minds of most people, hopefully 2021 is going to be a better year. However, obviously, we all went into 2020 thinking the same thing. So as my guest is arriving, she is just coming into the studio now. One of the things I wanted to talk about that was on my mind just as some kind of an introductory thing, and actually I'll bring her on and then she can put in her two cents as well. Miss Alicia Barr, how are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
I am great. So here's the thing that was on my mind today, and I think this is an important thing to talk about, and I never do. It's not even the topic we want to talk about, which is going to just be lights out fun, at least for you and I. Everyone else might not like it, but we will. I was thinking about mental health a lot today, this morning. So, and I don't share this a lot, not because I'm afraid to talk about it. It's just I mostly focus on positive things, and I, you know, get into that. But I think it's something super important. Like this morning, I just woke up super anxious, super worried. And I get that feeling a lot. And I just kind of want to share that with people out there. On one side, it's like, I feel like I need to do more for my clients. On the other side, I feel like I should have more clients. I should be doing more business development and more meetings. But then I have too many meetings on the calendar. And it's just overwhelm. And you just wanted to share, obviously, that happens to everybody. But the biggest thing is a tip is that for me, what I did this morning is I just journal. I journal a lot and I just dump everything out of my head. Kind of put everything into perspective and then, you know, kind of let that go and move on and just focus on the priorities. So, you know, for anybody who's struggling with that, then you know, that's one of my biggest tips.
I wonder if there's something in the air, Jason, because I felt the same way this morning. I think that we all do. It's a case of shoulding and shaming.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's just like, we need to give ourselves some grace and realize what our 100% reference point is, because we're probably comparing ourselves to someone who we have no, or something that we have no idea what went on behind the scenes. And we're actually doing way better than we realize.
Yes. That's always what comes up. At least right now, there's been periods throughout this year where I'm not doing well, or, you know, things aren't going like you want. You're just planting lots of seeds, but nothing's happened yet. You know, those phases for people like you and I. And you just get kind of stuck in the survival mode. And then it's like, okay, I got to do more and more. But you're right. I mean, you know, that's one thing I learned years ago is don't shit on yourself, right? Because it's just, and don't shit on other people.
Yeah, it's endless. I just actually posted about this and said, hey, if you ever feel like quitting, just think about how you would feel looking back knowing you gave up. And that always keeps me going. Like, I'm like, I can't do it. I can't deal with myself. I can't be okay.
Yeah. But then that's the challenge for me is I have that thought, right? And I think, okay, what if I look back and I quit? I'm going to regret that. And I don't want to regret that. And so sometimes that drives me into a deeper madness, which is, okay, I need to not quit on all of the 19 things that I'm doing. Right. So then it's like, okay, just keep going. You know, it's like, okay, I need to write the second book. Okay. The second book's being published. Okay. I need to write the third one. I need to do this. And maybe I should do more podcasts. Maybe I should, like, you know, the other extreme of wanting to quit, is where sometimes I get in trouble and I just start too many things.
It sounds like you need to prune that list.
Well, and that's where one of the books that I've been recommending to everybody is The Road Less Stupid. And anybody who knows me, and I share this a lot, I'm not a huge fan of books with titles that are like provocative and just trying to like get that shock factor in there. But The Road Less Stupid is great. The biggest one single line I took away from that out of everything is start less things, finish more things.
Yeah.
And so I actually finished them. So Brian, hey, how's it going? Glad that you're here. And then Nishant, my buddy in India, would it be awkward to say that I felt same today too? My latest post on LinkedIn.
It wouldn't be awkward. I would bet that most of us felt like that today. It is such a relief to find out that Jason felt like that today too.
And I'll tell you, I start a lot of days with that feeling, and then I just learn to journal, which is why I share that, right? A lot of people have that, but it just spirals out of control. For years, I couldn't get it to stop, and then I just learned like to journal, to relax, to put it in perspective, take it one thing at a time. Another thing I do, like what we were talking about and what you said, like pruning, is I'll literally have a post-it note on my desk with one thing written on it, and that's the one thing I'm going to do right now. Instead of the to-do list and the to-do list and then this to-do list that references this. No, just one thing. Just this one thing. And then that's it for until I'm done with it.
Yeah. Good. Sounds like a good strategy. So right. I will do the same today. So
one. Because otherwise I have a list. Now I have a list on my computer of all the things. And then I just kind of close that and I put one thing down and then just get that one thing.
The most impactful one.
The most impactful one. And if you're in sales, right, people watching this who are in a sales role or leadership role, that could be business development, right? That could be make those 10 calls. That could be do those outreach. Yeah, right? It could be send those 20 cold instant sales pitches to my new connections, right? It could be. No.
But don't do that. Don't do that.
Don't do that? No, that's not on the list. No.
Well, not the cold pitch. Nobody likes the cold pitch.
No. No, and I've talked about that so many times in the show. I've talked about it, you know, on podcasts. So I don't think we need to. The people who are tuning into this are hopefully not in that crowd. So
yeah, I don't think so.
No. So, Miss Alicia, for people who don't know who you are, or maybe they don't know who I am and they're here for you, what is it that you do? And, you know, share a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, so I am a sales and marketing coach, and I am launching a course in January. And when I do one-on-one coaching, it's all about the secret art of subtle selling, and that applies to marketing and sales. So we've talked a lot about this. Jason is one of the few people I found that shares my approach and beliefs and experience. What we recommend is definitely based on results in our experience. So. There's a lot of people that talk about the opposite of what we have found works. and it's just a relief to offer other people, you know, an alternative opportunity for those that feel uncomfortable about being aggressive or pushy or like digging into pain or shaming in selling or whatever.
Yeah. Which is interesting. And, you know, because we've talked a bit that I think the pain is important. I think you've got to uncover it. I think it's important to uncover the why more than the pain, because the why could be, you know, a goal. It could be a hope. It could be a dream. It could be a pain, right? They want to get away from a pain. But I agree. I mean, I know what you're referring to, which is the training or the idea out there. I've just got to find that pain. And that's my goal. And that's all I'm looking for. And then I've got to use that kind of manipulating against them with fear tactics and just all these terrible things versus just solving.
Fear tactics. I'm all about, like, you need to talk about what went wrong and where they are. And yeah, it's painful. That's why you're here. But let's focus on how it's going to be different now.
Yeah. Like, what's going to be different? What's going to be better? And how to get them there?
Yeah, right? We're going to be on the other side of this, and it's going to be okay.
Let's do it. That's awesome. So, what did we want to talk about today?
Sales management.
Woo! Yay! People are probably wondering why we're both excited about this. So here's what we want to talk about and where we're going to start. And real quick, I forgot to mention this because I got excited about the kind of the mental wellness side and that conversation to begin with. I have something special planned, and I posted this leading up to it this morning. Is I decided what I want to do is I want to give some books away. So I have some copies of Selling with Authentic Persuasion here.
Okay.
And I didn't really make up any official rules. It's going to be based on people who make comments or questions. And then I'm actually going to leave it up to you, Alicia, to pick winners of the book either throughout or during. You'd be like, hey, give them whatever. I got a box here. So, you know, however you're feeling about it, we'll do that. And if Alicia selects you, then just send me a message afterwards with your address. If you're overseas and sending you a book would be difficult, I have a PDF electronic version I can send as well. So anyway, I thought I would put that out there.
Compliment Alicia.
Yes. Yes. So say nice things about her, talk about her comments, you know, all the pressures on her for selecting. Let's see here. So Luis says a lot of people on the, he says the views on the desktop can't hear me. Let me change my settings. I don't know. I'll crank it all the way up. That should work. If that doesn't work, I don't know what else to do.
That's weird, Jason. Perfect.
Yeah. All right. Here we go. So
everything, Jason.
So what we wanted. Yeah, I can hear me, so that works well. So, so what we want to talk about, and this is a topic that you and I have brought up many times in conversations, frustrating things. We see this all the time, which is where companies promote salespeople, sometimes the top salesperson, into a leadership role, into a management role, into maybe a team lead role, and they're working their way up in there. Let's start with this. Why is that a bad idea? Because we're just going to, let's just tell everyone the spoiler alert. It's a bad idea most of the time. Not always. I will argue when we get there that it's not a bad idea for in some situations, but let's go with the premise. Why is it a bad idea?
I would say 95% of the time it's a bad idea. And it's because sales and management are entirely different skill sets. Like, so different. And just because you're good at sales has no bearing on whether you're good at inspiring people to be the best version of themselves and motivating them and also training them on how to sell better. A lot of people are good at something, but don't know how to teach it. It's a different skill set.
Yeah. And that's the biggest thing. And what I've always compared it to, and it's not always the best analogy because you could probably shoot some holes in it, but you don't ever see top athletes become coaches, right? You know, you don't see a LeBron James go and coach. Now, one side is he doesn't need to, he has the money he needs to, and maybe that's not his path, and he's leading in other ways, right? They go and they lead other organizations and they do great things in the world. My premise, because I've seen a lot of top performing athletes and tried to learn from them, just, you know, playing basketball or doing other sports, and they struggle with teaching people what they do because for them, it's either so natural or they've done it for so long and they've worked on it for 10,000 hours and they've put in the effort and they just don't understand why other people can't see the matrix, right? Like, why can't you just see it? It's just so easy. You just do this thing. And for top salespeople, where it's either natural or they've worked on those skills, I found it's really hard for them to coach other people and be like, here's what you do. Like, they don't understand why you can't see it.
A few things. Because what works for you does not necessarily work for somebody else. And that's really hard for people to understand. You generally make less money as a sales manager than you're not doing in selling, which if you're a top salesperson, that's what you love doing. So not only are you making less money, you kind of hate your new life. And you're not inspiring anybody around you to be any better. So it's just like a lose.
Yeah. And that's the tough part, right? And I think that's where a lot of organizations do it wrong with the compensation structure. Obviously, if you're a top salesperson, even a good salesperson, most organizations have it structured where if somebody becomes a team leader or manager, they're taking a step back. Or they're maybe about the same in compensation, but they're now doing a lot of work. They're stuck in an email and meeting hell. They're just doing things that aren't in their comfort zone, in their wheelhouse, in their expertise, which is emails and reports and metrics and meetings. And, you know, when it's done right, well, actually, we'll talk about it when it's done right for compensation plans. But I think that's the thing is organizations move people up thinking that because they sell well, they can lead well. And you made a point really quickly, which I think is important, is that most people who sell really well, and most people in general, they have a tough time not assuming everyone is like them or wanting everyone to see things the way they do or do things the way that they do, right? From a like a selling perspective, from a leadership perspective. And so they try to treat everyone the same.
Yeah, it's like those people who buy you the gift that they would always want, but like you don't want that gift. People are different and they're varied and they change with time, like depending on what's going on in their life. It is a hairy thing. You have to genuinely enjoy people and care about them in order to and care about understanding them in their differences in order to properly motivate them.
Yeah. And that's where one of the strangest, because based on reaction, it's very strange, strangest recommendations I make for every company and every leader out there is the five love languages. So getting to know the five love languages. And I saw a post about it the other day where somebody said the work love languages, to kind of separate that a little bit and make the focus on there. Because the main premise, of the five love languages is that everyone has this way that they see the world and they feel appreciated and loved. And most people speak their language, like you said, not even just giving the gift that they would want, but giving a gift because they like gifts. But what if I like quality time or words of affirmation, right? Like, what if I just want you to say nice things to me? You hand me a pile of money, I'll be like, that's great, except I just want you to tell me I'm doing a great job.
Totally. Like a lot of times, like in couples, you know, somebody will be doing, you know, I took out the garbage and I cooked dinner and I did all these wonderful, nice things for you. And the other person's like, I just don't feel love.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, right? So one person is speaking the language they have, which is acts of service, which is doing things. And the other person's like, yeah, but that's that I don't care about that kind of stuff, right? Maybe they just want gifts or they just want quality time. It's like, I wish you would just hang out instead of being busy all the time doing things. The other person's busy doing things because they think that's how they could show you that they care about you.
So true. And so a lot of salespeople think if they're promoted to leaders that, oh, well, we should just like tempt them with money or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
But a lot of salespeople aren't just, I was not financed. I was, of course, to an extent financially motivated, but more than anything, I wanted to feel like somebody had my back and could be flexible with my schedule.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so that happens a lot too, right? And especially see that with salespeople who are motivated with money, they move up and they assume everybody is motivated with money, right? They assume that everybody is exactly the same as them. And that if they, you know, because they got excited by the trip to the Caribbean, that everyone is going to want the trip to the Caribbean. And it's like that'll work for maybe a quarter of the people on the team, but not everybody.
Yeah. So, I mean, and some places do provide like some management classes and stuff, which is helpful, but I think it just comes down to identifying if someone is actually like interested and would enjoy managing people, because mm-hmm. most salespeople don't enjoy that. They just,
no.
Yeah. So they're not good at it and they're not having a good time. So there are some that do, and that's the 5% we're talking about that are successful.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's the other part too. And you nailed it, which is most organizations don't even provide any leadership training, any skills training. I mean, most organizations barely provide sales training. They yeah. provide some sales training and then they hope that people do it, or they play a numbers game. I mean, I've seen some organizations, even recently, you would think this would have changed by now, where let's hire 20 people and hopefully two or three of them stick. And you know, we'll just find some good ones who have it and we don't have to train them much, you know, and they're just going to bring it with them.
Yeah. They'll sink or swim. Most of them will sink. Some of them will swim. One of them is going to thrive.
Yeah. And that's it. They're hoping the 80-20 rule, just throw, you know, 10 people, 20 people, get a few, and then, you know, that's the one that succeed. And then they move that person up into training and management, and then they don't give them any training there. They're hoping that person knows how to lead because they knew how to sell, and it usually doesn't work out well.
Yeah, I mean, really management is also just communication. So I think a lot of people just don't know how to even communicate with somebody and ask them, like, what do you need? How are you feeling? Because everyone is so worried about themselves and how they look and what it implies about how good they are at their job, that the way mm-hmm. they communicate is often super defensive and sometimes like attacking and yep. like just a mess of fear. Everybody's scared. And so they're all communicating in this really negative way.
Yeah. And so you got to communicate well. And a lot of times salespeople are good at communicating to a certain level with their prospects, but not always, you know, to a certain point, but very linear. And then when you have a team of people underneath you and people are messy and people are confusing at times, like your sales team, you have to communicate different. You have to treat them all different. There's no linear goal, right? You're not trying to close your team on something, right? Yes, on taking action, but there's no finish line. You're no linear progress to move them to, right? No transaction with the sales reps on your team, which means it's just kind of this ever moving blob that you've got to manage and communicate with and keep going.
Yeah. But I will say that it does bother me when managers have no sales experience.
Okay. Talk more about that.
Because it's like, well, I don't want to listen to you because you've never sold anything. Like their advice is often so off about actually doing sales. So sales managers, you know, ideally have some suggestions for how to improve your sales. And I've had managers that had no sales experience and their advice is like, okay, it's clear that you've never sold this because that would not work in this situation. But I have to pretend like it's helpful because you're my manager. So thank you.
Are you seeing that a lot even now that organizations are doing that? And if so, at what level? I mean, are you talking sales manager? Are you talking VP, director level?
It's more like sales managers. I have to be honest, I haven't been in corporate in a while. This happened, though, a couple of times at one of the organizations where I was. And they were super nice people. But yeah, like you didn't want to bring them on a meeting. Like they weren't going to sell anything with you. It has happened. Like they actually sometimes would ruin the sale.
And where were those people being brought in from that you saw in the past? Were they being moved from other departments? Were they just brought in cold and somebody had, you know, someone had the credentials of being a manager somehow?
They were moved from like marketing of some sort or promotion or something like that. That is kind of related to sales, but like because we're selling the things that marketing or promotions creates, but not sales.
So and I think for me, one of the biggest things that I found is that organizations have the wrong expectation at all the levels. So again, you know, obviously we're chatting about this for leadership and, you know, any owners or leaders listening to this might identify with these people who are salespeople in an organization might identify with this from the bottom up. But one of the things that I've seen is that where an organization is looking at, let's say a sales manager. So let's say there's sales reps, then there's a team, there's maybe some level of team leads, then there's a sales manager, and then there's director and VP from there. They're expecting the sales manager to be doing a lot of managing and business corporate stuff and analytics and or metrics. Depending on how close that manager is to the front line, that manager needs to be almost in the trenches with the sales team as much as possible, right? Like that's where you see, you know, sales manager, there should be somebody else doing the higher level stuff. That sales manager is almost like that sergeant on the ground with their team. Like they're not flying high, right? They're not in the plane flying around over the battlefield. They're in the battlefield trying to keep everyone alive every single day and keep moving forward. And so I think, you know, organizations screw up who they think should be doing what.
That is so true, because there's respect also that's earned. It's kind of like the king that fights on the front lines with his army. Mm-hmm. He earned so much more respect because he knew what he was doing and he was willing to put himself out there and put his money where his mouth is and that kind of thing.
Yeah. And I've found that for me, what I am always willing to do is pick up the phone, mostly working inside sales, but even if it's face to face, pick up the phone next to a salesperson and do it, right? Whenever I write a script for a company or a client, I'm testing that script out because I don't trust anyone else to do it. And I do it. And the reps respect that. And when I tell them, use this script, it works. And here's how to use it. They know because I just sat there next to them. I had a client last year where I went to a bunch of trade shows. I am going to the trade show standing next to the other reps, showing them how to sell and selling with them and closing deals on the floor because I can, and I want to show them how it's done, and I want to teach them that way instead of do as I say, not as I do.
Totally. And honestly, that's how they learn the best too. So it's kind of like if you're learning to do certain exercises, if somebody's doing them in front of you, you get it a lot more than if they explained it verbally. So I totally agree. That's how I am too. I'm all about like at least doing a call that they can listen to or mm-hmm. out of bare minimum role playing, but really it works best with like a real person because it always goes different than you think it is going to go with a person.
And here's one challenge, and then there's a couple comments and questions I want to pop up. But one other thing before I forget, where the challenge with that sales manager, director, or VP of sales that hasn't sold, that's not a salesperson, and they're just disconnected from it, where you're just like, just stop telling me what to do because you literally don't get it, like that mode, what you were talking about, is the problem is that I've seen is that everybody underneath them is a salesperson. Salespeople are always selling. They're always going to sell their manager on why it's not their fault, why the leads are bad, why it's somebody else's fault, why it's the government's fault, why it's the weather's fault, why it's, you know, everything but that salesperson's fault. They're always in sales mode. And a really good salesperson is always selling. And you can't be too upset with them when they sit in front of you as and you're their manager and they're just selling you hard on everything but themselves. The problem is when a leader doesn't have any sales experience, they can't call BS on that and go, no, 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 that's truly your fault. You really messed up that deal, or you should have done X, Y, and Z.
That's such a good point. Yeah. And I mean, I honestly think that, I don't know. What do you think is more important for the person to have management experience and then learn sales, or the other way around?
I think they need to have sales experience and be good at selling at a certain level. They don't have to be the top salesperson, but they have to be pretty good at sales. And then have an innate desire to be a leader. And usually where you see that is on the floor. They are helping people around them. They are coming up with ideas.
The helpers.
The helpers, right? That's the ones you know. There's the top sales rep who sits in the corner, and if anyone asks them questions, they hate them, and they're like, you losers, stay away from me. And then there's the one who's like good or really good and helping everybody. And then there's the bottom sales reps who would rather be helping than selling, and you've got to watch out for that because they're just procrastinating.
Important delineation.
Yeah. So usually when you see the person who's in the middle or in the top, like in that top, let's say 50%, and they're helping and people go to them for advice and they're willing to jump on somebody's call or share their template or help them in certain ways, and they don't make everyone try to sell like themselves, they're just trying to help everyone win around them. That's the one, if you're going to do it, that's the one you're going to want to help.
Not that sharky salesperson that's like always trying to like take somebody's deal and like have a reason why it's theirs or whatever. Definitely not that person. But even though this person who's helping and good at sales, they still need management experience, because when they get in charge of that person, it is not going to go the same way as when they help them as a peer.
Yeah, for sure. All right. So before we get into the other topics, Nitish says sales is all about networking. And if you're good at it, then money would not be a part of intrinsic motivation. So, you know, when you're just intrinsically motivated and you want to do it, then the money is nice, but that's not the motivator. And I think that's really the shift. I'm going to guess for yourself as well. And where you said it's not only about the money. The money is not the main carrot for you.
No. And I really cared about what I was selling too. Like if we didn't deliver on it, it was really important to me to figure out why the hell the delivery was so off and fix it.
Yeah. Makes sense.
A lot of times managers were like, I don't know. Just go away.
Just sell. Just sell. Stop, yeah. Just sell and don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's a whole nother topic for a whole nother show for us to go over that whole attitude. So my friend Brian, he's back with a question. What advice can you offer to a systems engineer who often needs to sell people on an idea for a better way of doing engineering? I'm in a new field called model-based systems engineering and constantly needing to sell leadership on the new, better way of doing things. It's a paradigm shift for most old school system engineers, which it's funny because if you listen to my podcast, I end it with everything in life is sales, right? And this is the classic example. And I know Brian and I go actually back to when I was deployed overseas. That's how we met in like technical operations roles. And then I'm here, and then he just kept going with that. And he's amazing on the technical side. So what do you think? What would you say to someone in, you know, a role like Brian's?
Yeah. So in that case where you're shifting their thinking, the best way is not to tell them or pitch them. It's to ask them questions that help them realize that there is a better way of doing things that are worth trying. So it's like, okay, so this is how things are now. If there was a way to get it to this, would that be worth trying? Mm-hmm. They would have to say yes. if we put parameters around it so that it didn't go too far, would that make you more comfortable about trying it? What is the concern about implementing it? Do you feel that there's a chance that we would lose business from it? Like uncover what their concerns are, and they're probably not valid. And then they would just be like, okay, we have to try it, unless they're just really stubborn. And I'm so sorry. You just have to keep having the conversation and eventually be like, I can't be in this environment. Like is how I am. I eventually am like, I gotta go.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really good advice. I love those questions. I mean, when in doubt, always lead with the questions. And it's tough because there is that over under on where somebody's going to change or they're not. Here's the biggest thing, Brian, and for anybody in this role, especially when you're trying to shift coworkers, but it's the same thing as trying to shift prospects, is first they have to be somewhat open to the idea. So if they're not open, it's just, you're not going to move somebody. But the closed-mindedness or the, this is the way that we've always done it, or we don't want to do something new, is all just fear and people's wanting to stay in their comfort zone. Stick with what they know, what they're used to, what they're familiar with. Change equals death, right? Like I talk about it a lot. I have a chapter in the book about that, where it's our primitive brains think anything is new could lead to something bad, right? Eating the wrong berry could kill us thousands and thousands of years ago. And it's funny because that part of their brain, these engineers you're referring to, still like, okay, if we do something new, something bad could happen. And engineers and analytical people, which is how I am, the worst thing, their biggest fear is making a mistake or looking bad or looking wrong. That's it. Like that's their biggest fear. And so you've got to address that, ask questions, and then make it really, really safe for whatever you're doing. Hey, let's do this. How about I would like to try something new. If it works, I want to show you that it works. You guys don't have to change, but I just want to try it. If we can try this and it works, great. If it doesn't work, you know, give some outs, make it a small experiment, try it in a small scale, show that it's safe. It's okay. It'll be all right. And then everyone will, you know, people will come on board.
Yeah, like the parameters thing, like we'll make sure that we only try it and if it hasn't reached success by X point, we'll only do it with this account. And so the other big accounts are still going to be going and blah, blah, blah. Like, would that make you comfortable if it could increase our revenue by 8 million times and our efficiency by 5 million%? And then,
right.
Yeah.
And I think too, is in this kind of scenario is, and same thing with sales, is I would put it all on you. If you know that this way could work and you're willing to bear the responsibility and the accountability for it, be the one who will take the, I don't want to say the fall, but be the one who you will take the brunt if it doesn't work, right? Yeah. Because again, everyone's fear is that it's not going to, that they're going to look bad, right? Especially engineers. And so you want to say, hey, if this doesn't work, it's all on me. If it works, great. If it doesn't work, I totally take responsibility. I'll tell the boss it was all my idea. It was all my fault. But, you know, just make it super safe. Same thing with customers. When you're selling to customers and they're afraid and they don't want to do it because they're worried about it, hey, totally on me. We have a guarantee. I'll call you. I'll follow up. You can cancel anytime. You just got to make it super safe in the event of failure such that there's a safe way out.
And I like talking about the worst case scenario. If everybody's okay with the worst case scenario,
do it.
Then we're okay. And it's probably not going to happen. But like, just so we know, this is it.
Yeah, just address it and then talk about what happens if that happens and what would be the worst case, especially if you're doing a small test, right? Let's try it on this one instance over here. See if that works. If that works, we can try it again. You know, experiment with it. Engineers love experiments. So kind of feed into that and, you know, do what you can.
Good idea.
All right. So promoting salespeople, why is it a good idea? Any thoughts on that? I think we covered a few of them.
We did. So it's just about the salesperson who is good at sales and a helper, not a procrastinating helper, a helper because they really want everybody to win around them. And then giving them additional management training so that they understand how communicating to motivate somebody is different than just helping your peer with their proposal.
And I like what you said earlier, which is about the respect side, is when you promote somebody who's on the sales floor and you move them up, people know that they know how to sell, they can sell, they have no problem getting back on the phone and selling, right? And that's where you got to watch out for that procrastinating helper, because you promote them and they're like, yes, I finally don't have to get on the phone and sell anymore because I hated that and I just want to lead. And then when those opportunities come up where they need to get on the phone, they're like, no, I don't want to do it.
Yeah, there is a total, like, so the sales teams I manage, I don't need to take sales calls, but I do because it helps me understand what they're going through. Like, I remember when we had a sales manager and we all had issues with our sales system. And I was like, why haven't you once logged into the sales system? This all sounds like Greek to you because you've never used it. And he was like, that's a fantastic idea. And I was like, I'm shocked that nobody said anything to you about it before. Like,
oh my gosh.
Yeah. So when you use the systems, you know how to make them more efficient. When you do the pitch, you know where the areas of improvement are and the common pitfalls, and you can help them avoid those much faster. And you also get the respect and the money.
Yeah.
You get the commission too.
Yeah. So one thing back on why it's a bad idea or when it can be ineffective. One thing that popped in my head is, and I've seen this where it's a challenge, is a salesperson gets promoted to a team leader or manager. They're now in charge of their what were their peers a minute ago. And sometimes their peers don't respect them because they remember them when they were a rep. And now, and sometimes they were friends and buddies on the sales floor. Ooh. And then now they're in the friend zone, but now they're in charge and they're supposed to be telling someone what to do. And did you take your break? Or why didn't you close that deal? Or when are you going to follow up with your pipeline? And the other person's like, come on, bro. Like, I know who you are. Like, we're buddies. We just went out last night. And all of a sudden there's this like odd dynamic because they're in the friend zone. And
you
there's not enough respect.
It so hard. That reminds me that probably a good practice would be for companies to have a way to communicate to those people and say, hey, I know I was just there with you. These are my goals as a sales manager. This is what I'm looking at from you. I'm here to support you. I'm here to get you to this level. And I can do that if you give me this kind of exchange and that kind of thing. But I saw this at one of the companies that I worked at where they promoted salespeople, and they were still going out to get drinks with them in a way that was friends, and they had to stop.
Yeah. You've got to, there's a tough line in there where as a manager, as a leader of people, you know, the fraternizing part, like there's gotta be some limits. Like I'll go out with salespeople to a certain extent and then usually just leave, you know, make it nice. But I'm, you know, there's a line there so that the professionalism, the manager side, the boss side, what I found works really well, especially in an environment with a lot of growth, is you promote a team lead and then you give them all new salespeople coming out of training who don't know them as a rep and they don't know the past.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I see it so often the other way, and you're right. It's such a pitfall. And I know many managers who have struggled with then making that shift into authoritative position, and a lot of times have to end up moving companies, and then they come in as the manager. And, you know, there's some trials there too, because it's like, what do you know? I don't know you, and you might suck and you have to prove yourself, but at least you're not right. Like, you know, making that line between you guys clear.
Yeah. And that can be tough. And that's where you got to move around. And then, like you said, now you've got to show that you can do it. You've got to prove it. You've got to earn the respect of the tribe. And that's hard, right? It's tough to go one way or the other. So can it work? Right?
Yes. So yes. It can, but it has to, like we said, it has to be the right salesperson. It can't just be the top salesperson. And I think it's also important to have the conversation with the salesperson and say, hey, is this something you're interested in? Are you interested in people and finding out the different ways to motivate them? It is a varied experience. It's not like a one approach. They're going to do things differently from you, but it can be really fun to figure out what motivates them and very rewarding to get them to be the best version of themselves. And if they're like, honestly, not interested, then it's like, I would respect that.
Yeah. The last thing you want is a unhappy salesperson. You moved into a leadership role, potentially crippling their income potential and making them manage salespeople. And they didn't want to, right? Be careful about, you know, voluntold management and leadership.
The voluntold is so common.
Yeah. And for anyone who doesn't know that, you basically telling someone, you know, volunteering them for a position or moving them into something, not necessarily what they wanted to do.
And they usually sell them on the step after the manager. So eventually you'll get to be a director, and then it won't suck so much and you'll make more money.
Yeah. Theoretically, potentially, if you make it that far, but you probably won't because it's not going to go well. And then we're all going to lose trust in you. Because
the only reason people agree to become managers who don't want to be managers, right, is to get to that higher, like director and then VP. It's just a step on the ladder and the step that they hate because they basically have to eat crow for that period of time.
Yeah. So let's talk. So for me, what I found works really well is organizations where they promote, they promote the position out there. They make it almost a job posting internal, let people apply for it. The tough part with that, though, is that a bunch of people are going to apply. That procrastinating helper is going to apply. And then you've got to tell them no, because you really don't want them in that position. And then it could lead to hurt feelings on that side.
Yeah, that's true. I've seen somebody who continues to apply who was like that sharky person. And she kept getting denied. But then she finally did get it. But it was hard because she was the shark. You know, it was like, wait, do you really like people? Like, and like getting, you know, they could tell that there was something there. And I know that sometimes people also do personality tests ahead of time, which I don't know. What are your feelings on how accurate personality tests are for identifying a manager?
I think it depends on which one you use. I think it's very accurate at giving you an indication in one bucket. Some information in one bucket that you can then use and compare to other things and be like, okay, this person has some leadership. If they were to lead, here's what kind of leader they might be. Here's how they view leadership or management and what their personality is going to be like. Are they going to be controlling and domineering? Are they going to be supportive and nurturing, right? That kind of, you know, if you go in a DISC quadrant type model, then you'll get some idea of how they view the world for the most part. And then does that fit with the kind of leader you want? Do you need a controlling leader like a drill sergeant? Do you need a nurturing one? You got to be careful because if it's too nurturing, then they're not going to hold people accountable. But be like, you didn't call your pipeline. I'm ripping away your whole pipeline from you because it's been a week. Best of luck, right? Like that nurturing person is going to be afraid of the confrontation. And so it depends on what you need.
Yeah, it does. And a lot of times what you need depends on the salespeople you have, which changes. So, I mean, ideally you want somebody who's kind of flexible to what, or maybe we can just move them. If their team changes out, like you move them onto the team that responds best to that type of leadership style or something. But it is very much about like complementary personalities. Like it's hard to manage someone that you just really don't like.
Yeah. Well, and then there's that, right? And so somebody who can manage a wide range of people, who's going to treat everybody different, right? And providing them the providing that new leader, the coaching and training to understand how to do it. I mean, that's what it takes for organizations who want to be successful is actually investing time and effort with those leaders and managers so that they can be effective.
Yeah, so they can be equipped. Because once someone realizes how they can actually make somebody a better version of themselves, it's pretty exciting.
Yeah. Yeah, when that light bulb happens. And it's the same thing. Like the people who like to lead, when they do that from their sales role and they like that part, which is when I sell somebody and they really, like they get it. The light bulb goes off for that customer and they're like, oh my God, this is great. I really need it. If you like that, if that's your motivation, that intrinsic part that who was it? Natish said earlier, when you have that, then you love that light bulb moment more than you love the carrot or avoiding the stick.
Yeah, that's a great, great point. So I think like how to make it work is just really being able to distinguish between those people and then the desire and then the training.
Yeah. And then the tools. So here's the biggest thing that I see. And I have, you know, clients, I'm working with them all the time on this is usually where we start is there's not enough of a job description, a comp plan, accountability, and the framework and the rules of the game for the salespeople or the leadership, right? Sales, a lot of organizations like sell and then we'll hand you money. Don't sell. We don't hand you money, but there's nothing else. Like there's no activities. There's no like, if you're not making this many calls, we're going to put you on a performance improvement plan. If you're not closing this many deals per day, I mean, I deal in more higher volume B2C most of the time. So it's like, if you're not doing 3 sales a day, you know, but a leader stepping into that, they just got promoted. And then there's no guidelines they can hold anyone accountable to. And if you have no way to hold someone accountable, how are you going to lead them? You can't.
I will totally agree with you there. I think that that's the case for anybody with any staff, not even just salespeople. There seems to be a real lack of communicating what's expected and what's going to happen if it's not achieved. And then it's not a personal thing, it's objective. These were the things that we all agreed upon and it didn't happen. And so now we have to do this. And I'm so sorry because I like you, but we have these rules. So it's not personal because everybody's so worried about it being personal. And if you implement those metrics and expectations after the fact, it leaves a really bad feeling for everybody involved because we didn't know. So how could we hit them?
Right. And you, and what you said is perfect, because without those guidelines, without the accountability, the metrics, you know, the expectations, without that, what happens is it feels very subjective. It's like, well, why am I in trouble? Because I didn't do this, but this other person next to me didn't do it either. But why aren't they in trouble? Right. And it's just like this really hit or miss management accountability strategy.
Yeah, absolutely. I would agree that that's probably one of the main reasons that managing is so hard for people. Mm-hmm. Is they're like, I'm just not happy with your performance. I mean, wouldn't you have understood that I wouldn't be happy if you missed your goal three times in a row? And it's like, well, yes, but you know, there can be little goals up to that budget goal that are in place to make, you know, like milestones mm-hmm. to hit before that and challenges that get them there and who made the most cold calls, like gets some kind of pride. You know what I mean?
Yep. And I think, you know, because I think about it with the rules and accountability. And here's the challenge. Salespeople don't like rules, right? They're in sales because they want to sell generally. And it's because they don't like rules. Some of the career salespeople that I know, they pick sales because they don't fit in other places, right? They're not doing those other things or the career paths. They found that they're really good at talking to people, really good at conversations, really good at persuading. They like that. They like the free flowing theoretical nature of sales and selling and just, you know, having unlimited potential in their role. And they don't like the rules. But I will say everybody likes some kind of framework. Imagine playing a board game, playing Monopoly, but there's no rules. So you're playing it how you think. I'm playing it how I think. I don't know if you're winning. I don't know if I'm winning. You tell me I lost. Wait, I don't know. How did I lose? I'm playing my own game. I think I won. I've got this pile of things over here. How am I not winning?
I feel like there is a way to gamify the rules, though. So it's like, hit this and get this carrot. And salespeople can respond pretty well to that. I mean, everybody hates the CRM. I don't know how to solve that problem. but there can be other little milestones. Like, I know that they do give CRM awards because I have someone on my team who's like phenomenal with the CRM. He's like, I always won the awards. I'm like, even though they had awards, that's great.
It's great and sad that you have to award something like, you know, putting in your notes or updating stuff and keeping your CRM accurate. Again, that's a whole nother conversation about, you know, CRM usage. Yeah, I mean, I think you've got to have those things in place. You got to gamify it. I think it's always good to have the both the consequences and also the positives, right? So if you're hitting your metrics, if you're not hitting your metrics, obviously there's some kind of consequence or some kind of cost, right? If you are hitting your metrics and above, then some kind of bonus. And then it's up to you. You play the game however you want to play. That's totally up to you.
And I think that it doesn't always have to be like an incentive of money. So it could be like, okay, if you have 5 cold appointments a week, for a month, then we give you like 2 inbound leads.
I like that.
You know, so it just makes their life a little easier, but they still are earning the bonus.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. No, I like that. And whenever there's been inbound leads coming in, then that's always the ultimate carrot and the status you want to get to, which is getting those inbound leads and or being at the top of the list for those inbound leads. Also what I've done, because I'm always, you know, going back to the experimenting thing, like we talked about, always experimenting with different lead sources, because I've generally worked with inbound, marketing and campaigns. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to test a new inbound. I need people to test it. I'll bring in the best reps who I know can give me good feedback, and I'll usually incentivize them for the pain and suffering that might come from these new leads, but they're going to get something out of it. Or, you know, they're just going to be free deals and not count against them, even if they don't close them.
Yeah, I've often seen, like, if it's a cold lead, you get a higher percentage, one of the incentives. So there's so many different ways to incentivize the type of performance that you want. And I think that the key is definitely gamifying more than fear. but still having the objectives, measurements, or metrics in place that have to be enacted if it's not happening.
And that's interesting that you say fear, because obviously I don't believe that's a good way to go. And I feel like the fear side would be, okay, I'm afraid because I'm not doing well and I don't know what's going to happen. I think the best thing to do is make it very clear what's going to happen, right? don't be afraid. Like, you're not winning. Here's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
I want you to win. I'm going to support you, right? And this goes into the whole leadership management discussion we're having, which is, you're not winning. Here's the ultimate outcome. I want to help you. I want to get you there. We have to have that framework, right? It can't be just a mystery fear, which is today the day I'm going to be fired because I just don't even know if I'm doing well or not. Those organizations literally suck, in my opinion, because nobody knows their status. Nobody's getting feedback regularly, right? Like, nobody's telling the salesperson. The salesperson doesn't have a way to objectively know, am I doing well or not? And if I'm not doing well, like a report card, if I'm not doing well, how much time do I have? What can I do to fix it? There shouldn't be any question walking in Monday morning if I don't know how I'm doing right now. I wonder.
You know what is also something that I've seen is a really top salesperson who is a toxic tyrant. That is really toxic to the team, who makes everybody else perform not as well. Do you think that that's just like an inherent personality trait, or the management is not managing them correctly?
I think it's both. I think you could argue nature or nurture, nature and nurture in those two, right? Like, they came that way and then somebody enabled them to continue to be that way and then shutting it down. I'm going to guess most likely it's just people coming in that way.
They can get away with it.
And then it just makes it worse.
Yeah. If they can't get away with it, I guess they'll probably leave themselves.
Maybe it depends. If they're doing well and they're making lots of money, they're not going to leave because they've got control over everyone and they feel untouchable, right? Like, they there's no reason to go. And they know if they go somewhere else, they might have to actually be held accountable. So I don't necessarily want to change. And that's really where the challenge is. You promote someone from a salesperson to a team leader or a manager, and that toxic tyrant, as you say, is on their team and they now have to deal with them. Usually what happens is that new manager doesn't have the structure in place, doesn't have the tools in the toolbox to manage them, because the company's never set those up.
Totally. Man, there's so many factors and variables into managing an effective sales team. And when they come together, it is magical and amazing and will make so much money. But it is hard to get all of them right.
Yeah. And speaking of the money, I wanted to mention too, I think when it's done correctly, because you and I talked about this before, there's the sales reps compensation, right? And if you're watching this on the video, I'm doing something with my hand. If you're listening to this in the replay, obviously you're not going to see this, but there's a range where the sales rep is making their compensation, right? Could be open-ended at the top. Those ceilingless comp plans always scare me and sound too good to be true and sound like a get-rich scheme. But let's say there's some parameters, right, where at some level it's just humanly not possible to make above a certain amount in that sales role, right, whatever you're selling. And then there's the sales manager. The problem is the sales manager's comp plan is more like this, where the sales reps are just crushing any sales manager's comp plan any day of the week. Even average salespeople are always. It just always happens because a base salary is seen as this cost, and we don't want to do that. We want it to be performance based. And so, but what is the manager's performance based on? And they should always have a performance metric. When it's done right, the top salespeople should make more than the base of a manager. But a good manager with the right team, where everybody's hitting their numbers, or 80% of their people are hitting their numbers, should actually be able to eclipse a top salesperson, because now they're leveraging lots of salespeople, right? It's going to take some effort, but it should always be an option for them to make more.
Agreed. It's way more work to manage 5 people to success than yourself. Way more work.
Yeah. Yeah.
And way more money for the company when it's done right.
When it's done right, right? Like, because if you look at leverage, if I can sell, let's just say, if I can sell 10 widgets a week, that's great. Or a 10 widgets a month, right? That's great. If I can successfully manage a team of 8 people selling 8 to 10 widgets a month, that's some amazing leverage. And companies should reward that manager for the one for being the coach, right? If you look at sports, again, there's a lot of professional athlete coach or professional sports organization coaches that make a ton of money, that make more than a bunch of players on the team, right? There's a basketball coach is making $2, $3, $4, $5 million a year. The top players are making more than them because they're right. superstars, but they're making more than everyone else and they're doing pretty well. And it's all on them.
Yeah. I mean, I would want to incentivize the hell out of that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So I think that would definitely work. So any final thoughts here on our, on our way out?
Any other comments? Because I have to give away the books.
Yeah. So, well, so we had a couple of good comments. We had Mr. Nishant, Mr. Nitish, and then we had Brian. So I think the selection is pretty easy there.
Yeah. Unless, Nishant, Nitish, and Brian.
I will reach out to them. I don't know if they're still on here. I know it's tough sometimes in the live here with, you know, people being able to make it and working. Theoretically, you're supposed to be working. That's always the challenge with scheduling these live things. I mean, you and I have talked about before. It's like, I want people to join this live, and I also want people to be out there working and selling and making money. So, yeah, it's where replays come in.
Yeah, yeah. You can watch it when you have time. But, I mean, final thoughts, I think, is just, you know, understanding how valuable your manager is and like the leverage that we're talking about. If you have somebody who can affect a team of people to hit their goals, it's extremely valuable, like more valuable than just having top salespeople. And that's usually what I see is they just shower the top salesperson with the reward and the sales manager is kind of like, meh. Like, and the sales manager is trying to get to director. And get the hell out of this position. So I love what you're saying about the compensation structure. And then, of course, also just giving them the right training and tools, because communication is really different when you are not peer-to-peer.
Yeah. And I think that's where, you know, they're just not investing enough. Obviously, we want to give some training to salespeople. We know the cost of turnover for salespeople in, you know, there's the hiring, the recruiting, the training, you know, those fixed costs. And then you have like everything that goes into it. And then you have the missed opportunity cost. When I hand a sales rep the 10 leads and they don't close them that somebody else could have closed, I'm missing that money, right, from a bad sales rep who I'm going to let go. And then there's also the ramp up missed opportunity. A lot of companies don't do that analysis and really put the same emphasis when it's a manager or a lead, which is if this doesn't work out and we have to let this person go, what would that turnover cost us in opportunity and morale for the team? And we need to go all in, right? If this is going to cost us $100,000, $200,000 long term, if we lose this person, if they're not successful, then we need to put in serious bucks to help them get to where they go, and not a shameless plug for people like you and I. But honestly, anybody out there, courses, training, mentors. I mean, one of the things I love is organizations now that are really embracing this and bringing in executive management type coaching and mentorship from outside for their leadership. Even team leads moving up to managers, managers moving up to directors, bringing in someone like yourself and I, where it's like, you know, you know, sales, you know, leadership, help my person fill in the gaps, help them succeed.
Yeah, absolutely. Having somebody who actually knows what they're doing that has a proven track record of success, and just please stop promoting the top salesperson, please. That's my final thought.
And what I was going to say, my final thought was, if you're a salesperson listening to this and you would like to move up, take a lot of the things that we talked about in here, which is helping people around you, showing that you want to lead, showing that you can do both, that you can sell and lead. Because, and this is my final thought, is one of the things that I've always struggled with is somebody is selling, let's say, 5 widgets a month. I need 10 widgets a month. 10 widgets a month is amazing. I promote that person that's selling 5 up into a leadership role. Their capacity, they only know how to do 5, right? It's like trying to teach someone how to make $1 million if you've never made $1 million. Like, you don't know it. You know the theory, but you don't know how to actually do it. I don't want to listen to you. And I see a lot of times where companies move a manager, a rep up, and they're okay, but not great. And their whole team eventually will be okay, but not great. And so if you want to be that, you also have to show that you know how to sell and you know how to lead.
Agreed. I actually have another live on LinkedIn, my second live ever. So I have
what?
I have to go. It's in 30 seconds.
But you go. Thanks for joining, Alicia. Great seeing you.
So much for having me, Jason. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
All right. Have fun.
I hope this was valuable for everyone. And read those books, you guys. It's really good. I've read Jason's book. It's really spot on and different, which is the best part, I think.
You're awesome. Have fun.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
And for everyone else out there, please, hopefully you got some value from this. I'm hoping this was good for you. If you're in sales and you're looking at moving up, you're in sales, you're frustrated with your manager, you're not sure why it doesn't seem to work, maybe some good tips. Maybe you can subtly share this with your leadership team, your owner, your manager, and say, hey, check out this conversation I saw. And then hopefully, they'll pick up some things from this. If you're in a leadership role, just understand it's most likely not because you're not effective and you can't be a good leader, just need more tools, just need more support, just need the ability to do that and see that from a different framework, have the rules of the game. And of course, if you want to get the book, if you want to learn more about Authentic Persuasion, go to authenticpersuasion.com. Also, I have a new book that's coming out. It's actually available, but I need to make a couple of tweaks to it. It's going to be a Kindle-only book, and it's about handling objections. So I'll announce that one soon. But that's it for today. That's it for this live. And I will actually catch you next week. Super excited because that one's going to be a fun one. Until then, have more conversations about authentic persuasion. Thanks for tuning into the Authentic Persuasion Show. If you found value in this episode, please do two things. Subscribe so you can get each new episode and share this episode with anyone else you know in sales. Together, we can help shift the way sales is done. And if you want to find out more information about how to transform your sales career, or you want help with shifting your sales team from order takers to quota breakers, go to jasoncutter.com. Don't forget that everything in life is sales, and I will catch you on the next episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show.